Welcome to Career Tools. This week, Types of Mentors, Chapter 1. The questions this class answers are, do I need more than one mentor? What types of mentors are there? And why do I need a mentor? Before we start, I've got some exciting news for you. If you are a manager, are about to become a manager, if you ever thought of being a manager, you know that we recommend the Manager Tools Trinity and that hundreds of thousands of managers are using it all over the world in order to be successful with their teams. Until now, you've had to have the podcasts or the show notes, or maybe you've been to one of our conferences and you've learned how to roll out the Manager Tools Trinity, but they're all kind of one-offs. Now, we've created something which allows you to practically have Mark in your pocket for the whole 9 months it takes you to roll out the Trinity. It's called Roadmap and it's part of our app. It'll be in your pocket on your smartphone for your whole rollout. It teaches you everything you need to know and it tells you every step you have to go through in order to roll out the Trinity successfully. And when you've rolled out, it tracks your one-on-ones and feedback so you know how well you're doing. We're really excited about it and we can't wait for you to see it at the beginning of October. Okay, lucky people in the world find a mentor who just appears when they're kind of ready to go into the workplace, 20 or 21, and this person knows everything. They have the skills, they have the experience, they are skilled in the politics of the workplace, and this paragon takes you through your entire career and it's all roses and chocolates. And really lucky people do find that person. There are mentors who are just everything all in one. Some mentors might be good in two or three areas. And if you find one of those, you should keep them too. You should do everything to keep that relationship because those people are valuable. But sometimes you can't find one person with the skills and the experience that you need to help you. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about different types of mentors so that you can look at the people you already have and see if they're covering all the things that you need or that would be helpful to you in your career. And this is only chapter one. We might do some more later, but this is a good start. We've got five today. Yeah, we have five today and we may add to them later. So Kate, what are we going to do?
Our outline for today, what we're going to discuss is you need a connector, you need a politician, you need an expert, you need a challenger, and you need a cheerleader.
Easy, huh?
Yeah, it's exciting. We'll start with the connector. The first type of mentor that you need is a connector. This is someone who has a really big network. They're able to create relationships, maintain those relationships, and use them wisely. These are the type of people, they go to a conference, they go to an event, a work event, and they come home with 50 business cards, and then they actually keep in touch with those people. And it's very exciting. These people, they're really good at networking. They're really good at creating and maintaining the relationship. And this word, the connector, actually comes from Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point. He defines it as someone who has an extraordinary knack of making friends and acquaintances. Right? They're not just good at building and maintaining relationships. They also enjoy it. Because some of us, we work pretty hard at stuff, but it's not always our thing. In this case, your connector, you're looking for someone who has those relationships, is willing to make them, and then keeps up with them too. So that, you know, if they call in a favor or they want to connect you with someone, it's not out of the blue. They talk to these people routinely. And this kind of mentor is helpful in two ways. They love putting people together. These are the people who say, oh, do you need a guy? I got a guy. Like, I have a guy. If you have a problem, you have a question, if you have the best idea of all time, this mentor, your connector mentor, will be able to introduce you to someone who can help you and get you started, get you connected to the right person. They want to do this, right? They're good at it. A friend of mine is really great at this. I actually told him once, I said, I'm thinking about selling my car. He said, oh, you need a guy for that? I got a guy for that. First it was, I want to get my car fixed. And he's like, oh, I know someone who could fix your car. And then I said, well, I'm thinking about selling it too. He's like, oh, we could get it sold. I actually went on a trip and when I came back, he had sold my car. They don't just want to do it, right? They're really good at it. They'll sell your car within a week. If you need someone who can sell your car or who has a particular set of skills, maybe a software skill or even if it's something like calendar building, that's another thing. I don't know, all kinds of things. The connector mentor knows that person. That person's already in their network.
And they're not all high eyes. My brother is like this, and he's a high ass. And he always has a mate, because in the UK, you have mates. And he always has a mate, and you always get mates' rates. So if you need if you need a guy to do your boiler, it's all right, my brother's got a mate, and he'll give you mates' rates. He wants to do it. The high ass in him, who wants people to be happy, that's what makes him want to connect you with people and wants to keep in touch with people. So don't necessarily look for a really loud high I. High S's are really good at this as well. So a connector mentor also shows you how to build and maintain relationships. If you're not naturally good at this, then you can learn the techniques that the connector uses to introduce themselves, to start and finish conversations, what to write in keeping in touch emails. You can use what they say and do as templates for your own behavior. As Kate said, some of us have to work really hard at this. And one of the ways we can lessen the difficulty of what we're doing is to copy people who are doing it right. If it works for them, it's not disingenuous for you to try it and see if it works for you. It's not copying their personality. It's just behavior and techniques. And you just take those and see if they'll work for you. And 9 times out of 10, they will, because if it's working for someone else, it will work for you, usually.
Yeah.
If you're a bit shy, you might feel that this mentor is a bit forward. They assume a relationship that's not in evidence. You know, they might meet someone once. I met someone at a networking event. We had 10 minutes of conversation, and a week later she said, "Hey, I know someone who needs their resume done, but do you want to have a go?" I was like, "You don't know anything about me. We spoke for 10 minutes. You don't know if I'm any good. You don't know if I'm who I say I am. You have no idea." And yeah, you know, she was like, "Hey, this person needs their resume done." And you have to remember that these people have a huge network. So what they're doing is working for them. You know, my instant reaction is, "Whoa, I wouldn't do that." But when I look at it and I look at the people who are successful doing that, that's what they're doing. So maybe it's me that's wrong.
It's not wrong, right? Neither way is wrong or right. It's just different. And in my experience, when we see someone doing something that we wouldn't do, we think of all the reasons why it wouldn't work or why it's not a good idea.
Oh, I can never do that.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to us. So there must be something wrong with it. And I get that, because what we're saying is my experience tells me X and this person is clearly doing Y. And just because you would do it one way doesn't mean that the other way doesn't work. To be clear, guys, though, Wendy is really good at resume stuff. That's definitely the right person to ask. You're definitely the right person to ask. So, I mean, why not? For a person who's doing that, they're thinking, well, why? I just ask. What's the harm? You can always say no. So I love it. That actually happens a lot around here. But you could absolutely leverage this person's techniques and just give it a shot. It's one email. If it doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world. So that's the first kind of mentor we have. We also need a politician mentor. Mark talks about this sometimes. He says that when people at the bottom of the organization look above them on the organizational chart, they see politics. They think, oh, it's political. And it's often colored with a little bit of negativity when we say that, like, oh, it's political. The people, though, who are in those positions that we're looking at, they see cooperation, the favors and the support, the good word, all those kinds of things. Those actions are easily described as politics or cooperation, depending on how you want to categorize them. And what we know is that if you want to be successful, you have to understand the nuances of that. You know, who supports who and why do they do it that way? You have to understand why it's not wise to say certain things to certain people. These are things that a lot of us would characterize as politics. And that doesn't make them wrong, right? It's the same thing with the connector techniques. Just because we don't totally understand it or we're not comfortable with the idea, it doesn't mean that that's not something we need to engage in. You have to understand how to characterize other people's actions in order to understand why they would do it that way, and in order to be politically savvy, right? You don't want to put somebody under the bus. You have to be able to look at the organizational chart and say, okay, yes, this is what it looks like, but there's also an influence factor here. right? And some of that's just how we would call it politics, but that's not always the case. There's influence and then there's role, and they're not equal.
Yes. IBM did some research, 20 years ago, I guess. And they made two organization charts, one that was the actual organization chart and one which was a map of relationships. And there were people who had individual contributor roles who had vast amounts of power because of their relationships and the influence they had over the organization. The two maps were quite different. And the subtlety of politics comes easy to some people. And for others, a lot of what happens and why is kind of obscured. Or we do things and people say, that wasn't smart. And you think, well, why not? I was just doing what was straightforward. A mentor is able to help you understand the politics of your organization and help you navigate them. Those people are really valuable if it's not a skill of yours. And notice we say of your organization. Political mentors almost always need to come from your organization, because the subtlety of politics lies within the individuals in an organization. You know, a good political mentor may be able to help you from the outside, but it's nothing to someone who actually knows all the individuals, who knows the policies, who has some organizational history. There's something about particular organizations and the way politics works within them that it's much more useful to have someone from your organization.
They need to be able to know the people involved, because politics are based on the individuals that are involved. So you need a political mentor. You also need an expert mentor. And the expert mentor, they have expertise. They have domain expertise. They have a certain set of knowledge, a certain knowledge base. Right? It's kind of like a subject matter expert. They might have many, many years of experience. Maybe they have experience with something from the very beginning, from the ground up. For example, if you've been with your company for a really long time and there's a new product out and you were there from the very beginning, maybe it's only been around for 2 or 3 years, but you've been there the whole time. Okay, well then you could be an expert. Maybe you are a person who has a very specific set of knowledge, but you could still be an expert. Experts have very deep knowledge, and it's often very narrow. They know a lot of things about one specific thing. It's like a narrow subject, right? Maybe it's a computer language, or maybe it's IP law, right? Intellectual property law. It's a very narrow breadth, but it's really deep. They know everything about the subject.
Mark always says he's narrow but deep on management. Like, management's all he ever thinks about. But, you know, there's a billion other things going on in the world, but he knows a little bit about those things. He knows a little bit about a lot of things, yeah. But he's, you know, the depth is in management, because that's what he thinks about. And that's good for you as a mentee, because you only need to go to one person to get everything on their narrow subject. So if you want to know a lot about management, Mark is the useful person to know, right? One thing Mark's also good at is vocabulary. He has a massive amount of words, most of which I've never heard of. If you wanted to do a foreign language, for example, he would be useless to you. He has a little bit of foreign languages, but not very much. So, you know, it depends what you need to know. But if you need to know a lot about a single subject, the expert is the person to go to. If you have a domain problem, for example, I don't know, your typecasting routine in Swift isn't working, then the expert mentor will be able to help you. And if they can't, they are connected to a lot of people in the same narrow area. Now, if you think of a scientist who is studying one type of gene that we have, and, you know, often scientists are just looking at one gene and the effect it has on the human race. If you want to know about that gene, then that scientist is the right person to know. If you want to know about a different gene, that scientist will often know those people, because, you know, they're connected to other people who are doing the same thing in a different narrow field. And so they can often point you in the right direction.
Yeah. Sometimes you know someone, like if we're using Swift as an example, they know everything about Swift, but not a lot about other computer languages. But they do know other people who deal with computer languages. Right.
Right.
And so you can absolutely leverage that a little bit. And so that's the difference between the expert mentor and the connector mentor. Experts have the depth and connectors have the width, the breadth. And so you need both. That's the whole thing. It's funny to think the perfect mentor might be out there. And it might be true that you also need some extra mentors to help you along. So we need a connector and we need an expert, because the expert's useful too if you want to know what to do next. Maybe you've been working on the app for a year and you want to become the domain expert. The expert mentor can tell you what to do and where to go because they've already been there. It's kind of like learning to drive. You've passed the written test, but you want to get to the next level. Well, that means you need to find a knowledgeable driver, an expert mentor, if you will, to teach you. And this is how the expert mentor can help you. They can leverage their knowledge or maybe even connect you with somebody, right, who knows stuff about that.
Yeah. So next up, we have a challenger. So we need someone who will challenge us to do better. And it's really easy to coast when you've been in a job for a few years and you know how to do it well. If you are causing your boss no problems because you're getting your job done and your customers are happy and you're meeting your deadlines, your boss doesn't necessarily challenge you to do any better because you're not the squeaky wheel. You know, to say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, it's the bottom people who your boss concentrates on. And, you know, equally, your boss might be content to coast, or he might have bigger fish to fry somewhere else. He's a political kind of guy and he's doing something somewhere else in the organization to prepare him for the next step that he wants to make. And that's not necessarily good for you. Often the competent but undemanding person on the team is the member of the team that gets the least attention. And whilst that's lovely for a while, standing still in a job is the same as going backwards, because everybody else around you is going forwards. Imagine standing next to 10 travelators. You know those flat escalators that you get at airports?
I do.
Yes, of course you do. You have millions of them. If there were 10 of them and each of them had one of your team members, your peers on it, and you were just on the concourse, they all get on the travelator, they start walking, and you start walking on the flat concourse. Within a minute, they're going to be ahead of you because the travelator kind of moves them along. That's what's happening when you're coasting. You're just walking and everybody else is moving faster than you. And so eventually, within not very long, 6 months, a year, everybody's ahead of you and you're just where you were 6 months ago, and that's not a good place to be.
We have to move forward in order to not be left behind. They're moving at a faster pace than you. So the new projects they're working on, the meetings they go to, these process improvements and upgrades and software changes, ideas, these are all forces moving them forward. And you're just at your steady pace. At some point, it's going to become obvious that you're behind and you'll be given a choice. Either catch up or leave. And this is the nature of the beast. It's how business works. It's how things work. Things are changing very quickly around us. And we struggle with that sometimes. Humans are really built to live in their comfort zones. We actually just had a newsletter about this where things change sometimes without you even noticing. For example, I was talking to Paul on our team and he's automated some stuff since I started working full-time for Manager Tools. He's automated some stuff for us, specifically for Sarah and I. And the website has become just, it kind of runs itself a little bit for Sarah and I. I mean, I know it runs itself, but our stuff has gotten a lot easier. And I realized that there's some processes that we used to do all the time and I don't have to do them anymore. And so those little changes, they accumulate over time. And that's part of the speed that other people are involved in. You can become very comfortable because humans are built to live in your comfort zone. It's hard to get comfortable because of that pace, the changes that are happening around us. So once we find it, we kind of get all snuggled in. We're like, okay, I'm just going to climb in here and stay. That's not a great way to do things. Things are changing without us even noticing. The people around us are moving quickly. The pace of business, the pace of just the world says that we need to keep moving. And a challenger mentor is there to help us get out of that comfort zone. They ask us to do more. They ask us to grow. They ask us to be better and do more things. It doesn't really matter if this person is part of your workplace or your company. That's not really an issue. You can choose someone who's in a different industry than you or a different place than you, because challenging ourselves to do better in one area of our lives, even if it's just maybe it's the gym, maybe you set a goal, that causes a ripple. And so we can increase our effectivity and our output in all areas of our lives if we have a challenge or mentor in any part of our life. So that's good news. It doesn't have to be someone from your work or your industry or your specific career stuff. It can be somebody who's just there to challenge you and keep you moving in another part of your life. They could be someone at Toastmasters and they say, okay, you need to, you know, get that certificate or complete Toastmasters. Or it could be a friend who challenges you to learn something new. I have a friend who's a photographer and I've been learning a bunch of stuff about cameras. It could be someone at a volunteer organization and maybe they say, you know, you'd be great being a leader. You could be a big part of the team, things like that. All of these kinds of people could be your challenging mentor. It could even be a book, right? It could be like my gym has challenges where they say, we want you to complete a certain number of classes in a certain number of days. And it does, it drives you. It causes you to reevaluate. You know, it's the things that get measured get done. And so that challenge often can cause you to look at other stuff and measure those things and increase your output and your speed and really just do better, do more.
Absolutely. The last kind of mentor that you need is a cheerleader. And cheerleaders are the ones who celebrate our achievements, however small they are. These are the people that are always on our side. And it is better, in our experience, if they're not related to us. Because we can all find excuses why someone who is related to us is cheering for us, right? Oh, well, he's my dad. He has to. Yeah, he's my brother. He kind of has to. An outsider cheering for us means much more. And most of us, you know, we talked about humans are built to live in comfort zones. Humans are also built to look for things that are wrong. If you're in a savannah, you have to be looking for the lion. And, you know, 90% of what you can see is bushes. And so you look for the one thing that's moving, which is a lion. And so that's what we're like in our day-to-day work. We look for negatives. We look for things that are going wrong. We look for things that are about to go wrong. We look at emails and we see the spelling mistakes. I sent an email this morning and there was a comma missing. And it wasn't even to anyone. No, it was for a regular correspondent. You know, it wasn't someone who was going to. It wasn't like I sent it to 35,000 people, although I've done that too. But I looked at it and I was like, no, there should be another comma there. We watch presentations and we criticize the slides. We get spreadsheets and we correct the formulas. And whilst this is a really useful trait, you know, this is something we're supposed to be doing at work, you know, the get it right first time and quality management and all that says we should be looking for the mistakes and correcting them. But some of us don't ever see the positives. And the cheerleader is the person who notices your hard work and success, even when you don't. It's the person who says, like, you've just told me 5 things that you were doing for other people, and yet you say you're a grouchy person who never doesn't like other people. Like, you know, the evidence is saying that your self-image is wrong. And I'm going to cheer for you for doing all these things for other people's.
Yeah, we should be able to focus more on the positives for ourselves, but it's often easier sometimes to focus on positives about other people. And the cheerleader can do that for us. Sometimes we, you know, it's like we can't see past our own feet. And so we might need someone who can say, hey, great email. Even if there was a missing comma, they could say, really great presentation. You did great with the questions, even though the slides had an error, or the spreadsheet was really useful, even if it wasn't perfect because there was an error in one of the slides or in one of the cells. These are all things that the cheerleader can say. And there are people out there who are really good at this, but often too, it doesn't have to be someone who's super positive. You know, we said you don't have to have a high I mentor who is your connector mentor. It could be a high S. And the same is true here. It could just be someone who is not you to cheer you on, because sometimes it's just enough to be able to look at another person's situation and say things that are positive. So it doesn't have to be a high I, doesn't have to be a high S. It could be just somebody who believes in you and can see things from a different lens, because we want to see the positives when we can. And it's often really hard. As we've said, we are trained to look for outliers. It's a great position to be in, right? It's a great position to be in to say things are so good, we only have to look for like the little error things. we're not struggling with everything. Like, thank goodness we have email and that we have an ability to use it that allows us to be upset or worried or concerned about things like commas. That's a nice worry to have.
First world problem, right?
It's total first world problem. And it's good that we have that, that we are allowed to look for these outliers. And we do often need someone to remind us that most of what we do is good. 90% of the work that most of us are doing is positive. Maybe it's 70 or 80, but in my experience, it's easy to get kind of hung up on the stuff that goes wrong, and we don't always focus on the things that are going well. And so we often need a cheerleader to help us see the positives, to look for good things and good traits, new stuff, exciting things that are happening. We need to be encouraged often. And even if it's something as simple as somebody who goes to coffee with you and says, you know, I know it's hard now, but you're going to do great. That's a good thing. That's a person to have. And we want to not just have this person in our lives as our mentor, but have them to learn from. Because sometimes even just a kind word to somebody in passing or at work can help them. And it's really part of our relationships is keeping things positive and focusing on the good stuff when we can. And it's often easier to do for other people. So this is a really good mentor to have, a cheerleader mentor, someone who can keep your spirits up and keep reminding you that, yes, there are outliers. And most of what you're doing is still pretty good.
Those people teach us how to do that for other people as well, which is a really valuable thing if you're the kind of person who only sees the mistakes. I just realized we said hi D, hi I, hi S, and hi C without explaining what it was. So these come from the DISC profile, which looks at your preferences and behavior and then translates them into communication styles. And different people have different communication styles and different preferences. If you go to the website and put DISC in the search box, you'll come up with bunches and bunches of podcasts that will tell you all about it. And it was the most valuable thing I ever learned in my career. So I encourage you to do that if you didn't know what we were talking about when we said hi I and hi S. Lucky people find mentors who are skilled at all the facets of a successful business life. Those people exist. They're probably CEOs because they've been good at everything their whole lives. If you can find one of those people and that person will be your mentor, you're set. But if you don't find one person, then two or three or four, each skilled in a different area or in two or three areas, will help you along just as well. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Mandy.
I thought it was helpful. We'll be back next week.